Is that Pitt talking? Is he trying to tell me to be quiet? So Pitt comes up every Monday and Wednesday and has for many, many years, and Pitt services our airplanes. So the airplanes fly on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and I flew last Thursday, and I brought home 22 passengers. I took down like 19 or 20, and our airplane has a bathroom. So that bathroom doesn't clean itself. And so that's actually what Pitt does. Pitt cleans the airplane, he cleans the bathroom, services that, and then often he stays to help load the airplanes as well. And then Fred moved up to Palm Bay a few years ago, but we do still see Fred on Mondays. He comes up and does some maintenance on our airplanes too. And then I'm sure there's others that have been up there to volunteer. So that's kind of our connection with all villages. And so I just want to thank you all for that. And so now I'm going to invite Blue up for the scripture reading. So Blue is our middle child. He is 11 years old, and he is going to read from 1 Samuel 3, 1 through 10.
The boy Samuel misunderstood before the Lord under Eli. In those days, the word of the Lord was rare. There was not many visions. One night Eli, whose eyes were becoming so weak that he could barely see, was lying down at the temple of the Lord, when the ark where the ark of the Lord was. Then the Lord called Samuel. Samuel answered, "Here I am." And he ran to Eli and said, "Here I am, you called me." But Eli said, "I did not call. Go back and lie down." So he went and lied down. Again the Lord called Samuel. And Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, you called me." "My son," said Eli, "I did not call. Go back and lie down." Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord. The word of the Lord had not been yet revealed to him. The Lord called Samuel a third time, and Samuel got up and went to Eli and said, "Here I am, you called me." Then Eli realized the Lord was calling the boy. So Eli told Samuel, "Go and lie down. If he calls you, say, 'Speak, Lord, for your servant listens.'" So Samuel went and lay down in his place. The Lord came and stood there, calling at the other times, "Samuel, Samuel." Then Samuel said, "Speak, Lord, for your servant listens."
So in 1998, while I was in the middle of my chemical engineering degree at the University of Florida, I decided I didn't actually want to be a chemical engineer anymore. I wanted to follow my dream to be a pilot in the Air Force. So I did what you had to do, went and talked to a recruiter, kind of did everything that needs to be done with that. And eventually, through all the tests and stuff, got accepted into the Air Force. And it was a dream come true. It was something I had always kind of wanted to do, but had never chosen to go and pursue that. And so here, it was going to happen. Except I had actually failed one small part of my physical. I'd had perfect vision my whole life, but you know, if you're going to be a pilot in the Air Force, especially back then, you had to be perfect. But the recruiter's like, "No big deal. You can take it again. You have another chance to pass it." Well, I took the test again, and I did not pass it. I failed. So I went from having this dream is about to come true to, "Nope, never mind, you have failed this, and you can't be a pilot in the Air Force now." So I continued in my education. The Bible reading this morning that Blue just read about was about a boy that God called. And there are many, many examples in the Bible of God calling people. And you start to look and you realize how many there are. There's Noah, Abraham and Sarah, Moses, Jeremiah, Isaiah, David, Jonah, Esther, and possibly the most famous with the most dramatic call is Saul. So every one of those stories is a little bit different, which is actually pretty awesome because none of our stories are the same. Some people God calls to build an ark. Some he calls to leave their homeland and just follow him. Others are called to preach and start churches, while others may be called to just follow him in unique ways in their lives where they live, where they are. There are so many examples in the Bible and outside of the Bible of women and men who God has called and who have answered that call. So this morning I'm actually going to take this time to share with you about my and my family's call to follow him and kind of how we went through that process, the roadblocks that were there, and then the awesome answers that God provided. So a few minutes ago, I shared about that collapse of that dream in the Air Force. But you know, anytime those things happen, you know, you're kind of devastated. You don't understand in the moment. But then hindsight gives you that kind of 20/20. And I kind of realized, you know, it actually was okay because God wasn't in that plan. It was my plan. Like, I was making decisions of my life and of my career choices that I wanted to do that didn't really involve God. And that doesn't mean that I wasn't a dedicated Christian. I was. I grew up in a Christian home. I went to the University of Florida and stayed really involved. Actually met my wife at the Baptist Student Union at the University of Florida. But I didn't really spend time there seeking God's will for my life on kind of a bigger scale. I pretty much was, you know, doing the Christian thing with my Christian friends and Christian girlfriend and going to church, but at the same time doing what I wanted to do. And I kind of look back and realize that maybe if I had spent more time with God and pursuing that, that he would have shown me much earlier what his plan was for my life. So, like I mentioned, I met Phaedra at the University of Florida, and we started dating her senior year. She graduated in May, and then I graduated in December. The Air Force thing had not worked out, so I had finished my degree in chemical engineering. So I started looking for places that I could work. And this was back in 2000. So this is still in kind of the infancy of the internet. You know, it's kind of hard to think back almost 20 years ago, but it wasn't like it was today. So I was able to find, though, some chemical manufacturers in North Carolina. I was able to email out my resume and had one reply for in North Carolina. And actually, in the job fair at Florida, I had been offered a job with Intel. So the Intel that makes computer chips up in Portland, Oregon. But I didn't really want to go to Portland. Like, I love Phaedra. You know, she was in North Carolina going to grad school. And that's a really far, you know, it's a long ways apart. So sent out that resume and was offered one job. Got contact reply from one company, had one interview, and was offered one job, which happened to be in Wilmington, North Carolina, which is where she was going to graduate school. And so it's one of those things that, you know, you look back again, that hindsight, that's very obvious God's intention for me to find that job. So I moved to Wilmington in January. This all was happening in January of 2001, January 2001. So we got engaged about a month later and then got married in August of 2001. So we settled into life there in Wilmington. If anyone knows, Wilmington's on the southeast coast of North Carolina. Actually, you know, it's big news now because that's where Hurricane Florence kind of did all of its damage, was there in Wilmington. And we loved Wilmington. We had a wonderful church there. We made great friends, still great friends that we have to this day. Saw them this summer. Wilmington's a beach town, but it's just nice. There's great food, great beaches, great church. I had a great job. So everything was going on really well. And while we were there, we weren't necessarily, again, we were kind of happy with the situation we were in. And so while we weren't necessarily seeking God's will for our lives, he kind of like what he did with a lot of the folks in the Bible, is he kind of said, hey, you may not be seeking me, but I'm seeking you. And so we kind of heard God kind of speak to us. We didn't really know what he was saying. We didn't know what he was calling us to do. But we knew that, and we had a conversation that I kind of remember us having, that if we were still in Wilmington in 5 to 10 years, we will have known that we missed his call. And again, we had no idea what his call was. Like, we were happy there. We had a great church. We loved the town. We had no reason to be looking to go anywhere else. But God had a different plan for us. So it was kind of like Samuel. Samuel was hearing God's voice, but he didn't really know it was God's voice. He thought it was Eli's voice. And he definitely didn't know until Eli told him, hey, Samuel, go back and listen. This is God. And just ask him, and he will tell you. And then we kind of ended the story there. But if you read on, God tells Samuel, you know, and God has a big, huge plan for Samuel's life. So we started listening. And at this point, looking back, like, I do not remember when I learned about mission aviation. I actually was learning to fly just recreationally. I'd always been interested in flying. So I was working on my private certificate while I was there. And in that time, this was in about 2005, like, God introduced us to missionary aviation. And when he did, we kind of knew right then that's what he was calling us to do. So now comes the decision. Like, do we answer that call? do we actually leave Wilmington and pursue an entire new career kind of in our mid to late 20s? Because that path isn't easy. You know, it's like if God calls you all of a sudden to be a doctor, a missionary doctor, well, you can't just walk up and say, hey, I'm ready to be a doctor. You know, they're like, well, are you a doctor? You know, so you got to go to school, do all that. And same thing with being a pilot is you've got to go and you've got to, you know, get your commercial multi-engine instrument ratings. You all mission aviation organizations require you to be a mechanic as well. So not only do you have to go be a pilot, you got to go learn how to be an aircraft mechanic. Many years of schooling, and it's not cheap. So we made that decision. And all missionary pilots also have to raise their own support, as you all kind of know, meaning, you know, our organizations don't pay our salaries. We have to spend months before we begin, and then forever after, you know, until you retire, kind of maintaining those relationships and doing that. And you all know that from the beginning. So that's also something that you have to make that decision of, hey, are you willing to go and do all this training? But then also knowing when you're done with training, you have to go raise support before you can even start working. Well, we obviously said yes. We knew that's what we were supposed to do, and so that's what we did. We went and pursued that. So decided to head to Texas. So East Texas is the school we wanted. We wanted to go to a Christian school so that we could build relationships with the organizations while we were getting some Bible training and doing our training. So we headed to East Texas and found a great church. And let's see, and after we moved there, we felt God calling us into something different, which was to be foster parents. So I tell this a little bit because it is part of our family story. So we become foster parents, and our first emergency placement we ever received was Blue. So Blue came to us at 11 months old in November of 2000, and he obviously never left. So tied into that is, and I didn't really mention Caden, who is our oldest son. We actually adopted him when we were still living in North Carolina in 2005. And part of the reason we started our family with adoption is that we knew through some familial connections that Phaedra was a carrier of a genetic disorder called Fragile X syndrome. And we knew that if we were to have biological kids, we'd have 50% chance of having a child with Fragile X syndrome. So we had kind of delayed having biological kids, not having made that decision. Well, we were in the process of adopting Blue, and Phaedra got pregnant. It was a surprise. We hadn't planned it. And so Toby was born in May of 2009. And you guys may have seen Toby here. And Toby was diagnosed 2 months after he was born with Fragile X syndrome. And that just threw our world kind of into complete disarray because we knew God had called us into this. We knew that we were supposed to be here doing mission aviation. And now, hey, we have a son that has this diagnosis that we know that we can't take overseas. And overseas is where all mission aviation is, so I believed. So we really kind of started looking, well, what are we going to do? Do I have to be a chemical engineer again? Do I have to be a commercial pilot, which I did not want to do? What's happening here, God? And so I was just casually talking about a month after that we were at school, and the long-term administrative assistant there at the flight school was like, oh, there's this organization in Florida, I think, that does mission aviation down to Haiti. I was like, okay, I never heard of them. They didn't come to career fairs or mission weeks, any of those kinds of things. So I did a quick Google search, and missionary flights popped up as the second link. Clicked on, this was all happening on about a Wednesday. And so went and Googled Mission Aviation Florida. Missionary flights showed up, clicked on it, went to the link, and they looked relatively legit. And, you know, even though the website was not fabulous, but they seemed legit, been around for 45 to 50 years at the time. Started talking to our director of operations there, and he was like, oh, yeah, I know the vice president there. And I was like, well, that's cool. Why don't you call him? So he called up the vice president here, Larry, and said, hey, call back. Larry said, you can call back and ask for Dick, who's the president, Dick Snook. And so that Wednesday afternoon, I talked to Dick, and Dick's like, oh, that's interesting. You know, so we just kind of had this conversation, and he was like, well, send me your resume and your faith statement. And so I did that. And I think that was a Friday I got that to him. And Monday, they kind of have the executive committee, and they kind of meet and talk about candidates. And so Monday afternoon, I got a call from Dick saying, Kevin, we talked about you this morning. We'd like to invite you down in October to kind of meet our board of directors. And even though I didn't know it at the time, Like, that pretty much is the process, and that's kind of a done deal at that point. Once the executive committee is kind of good, they talk to you, they invite you down, you meet the board, you're kind of accepted. So we knew then that God kind of answered our questions. You know, from a Wednesday to a Monday of not having any idea what was going to happen, to a Monday of Dick calling back and saying, "Hey, Kevin, we'd like to invite you down," that God had kind of showed us where to go. And so, you know, looking back, God knew about Caden and Blue and Toby. He knew when he called us to be a missionary aviation family that he was going to have us living in Port St. Lucie, working at missionary flights up in Fort Pierce. Because, you know, and Phaedra's mom lives here, of which, again, is just an awesome kind of God putting that all together. He knew that we were going to be serving with missionary flights in Fort Pierce, going to church in Stewart, partnering with All Villages Presbyterian Church. God knew all of that. And so I just kind of wrap this up now, kind of tying it back to you. And what you're doing every day, are you listening to God? Are you seeking His will for your life? He's probably not calling you into missionary aviation, but he may be calling one of your children or grandchildren. He may be just calling you to serve him here in an unusual or uncomfortable way. I'm sure All Villages has opportunities all the time, and you're like, well, should I do that? Should I step up to do that? Maybe that's God calling you to do that. Every day I see wonderful examples of God's grace and love with the missionaries that we fly in Haiti and the Dominican Republic, because they are serving him and serving his people down there. So I just want to end that with thanking you all for letting me come and just, you know, continue to be sensitive to that. We did not know back in 2005 that this is what God was calling us to do. We thought we were happy and good in our situation in Wilmington. And yet, because we listened to God and answered his call, he has shown us an awesome, wonderful way to serve him each and every day. Thank you.
Stratton family, thank you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for your answering your call. God's call in our lives, as we've been talking about, is something we don't always aren't expecting. Just like Samuel, we might not realize it's his voice calling us. Just like Samuel, we might not know what to do next. But thank goodness for Eli, who said, you know what, listen up. He might be calling you to do something. He might be talking to you. And our role is to say, yes, Lord. Now, what's the question? It's important. It really is. God doesn't need you, but he loves you. And he wants you. And he invites us to be about what he's doing in this world. So some of you might be, your frontline ministry is what we've been talking about for several weeks now, where he's placed you. He might want you to be a teacher. He might want you to be in charge of your grandkids. He might want you to be volunteering at an organization or community. He might want you to be his light and his love at your work, where he's placed you. It's about us being open and saying, yes, Lord, here I am. Send me. Ooh. You didn't hear that. I just repeat it so you could. It's a blessing. Thank you, Stratton family, for answering the call again. Thank you for your partnership, and we pray that God will continue to bless MFI, Missionary Flights International. It's good stuff.